This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Consider this line. Creativity is the new raw material. That's according to Richard Florida, the author of The Rise of the Creative Class. His book generated a lot of attention among urban planners 2 years ago. And since then, Florida has worked with several cities across the country. He tells civic leaders that to prosper in the information economy, they have to attract the creative class. And that means appealing to scientists, artists, high-tech professionals, teachers, and anyone else who's paid to think. NPR's
Richard
Elizabeth
Florida
Blair reports.
Has been called an audacious thinker. He's turned the old formula for urban development upside down. Historically, when cities have wondered how to strengthen their local economies, he says they've only focused on attracting companies.
And the only thing cities really thought about people was that they wanted to make their city have safe streets and good schools and they could attract families. But that was seen as an afterthought. If you could attract the companies, they would create the jobs and they would bring the people and then you'd build your city.
But that won't work anymore, says Florida, because today's information economy is driven by creative people, and people are mobile. To attract them, Florida came up with a formula called the three T's, technology, talent, and tolerance.
Cities have to invest in science and technology and universities and research capability. Cities have to become places that grow talent, that attract talent, that nurture talent, that become exciting for talented and creative people. And thirdly, they've got to be tolerant. They have to be actively seeking to be diverse and inclusive and open. Only a few cities score high on all three, maybe San Francisco or Boston. Most cities score high in one. So you have a Pittsburgh or a Cleveland that score really high in technology, but score really low in tolerance. At the same time, you have a Miami or a New Orleans that are kind of diverse places where people can go have a blast and everybody is welcome, but they don't have a lot of technology.
In other words, smart, creative people are drawn to places where there are other kinds of creative people. They need jobs, but they don't want to live in a city where there's nothing to do. Arts and culture, integrated neighborhoods, immigrants, gays. These are some of Florida's sometimes controversial signs that a city's getting it right.
I'm Lucy Mead, Director of Business Development for Richmond Renaissance.
Lucy Mead works on urban renewal efforts in Richmond, Virginia. She says she and her colleagues already knew the aesthetic side of a city was important, but Florida helped them convince others that it was more than just a frill. They invited him to speak, and a lot of people showed up.
We had the governor here, we had the mayor, we had members of council, we had probably 500, 600 people from, you know, artists and musicians to corporate folks. And what's so neat is how he energizes an audience. I don't really think he empowers people, and particularly people that maybe haven't felt that they're an as important part of a community as they really are.
Richmond has impressive assets. Virginia Commonwealth University has invested millions in biotechnology and forensics. U.S. News and World Report ranks its sculpture program number one in the country, above Yale and the Art Institute of Chicago. But like a lot of university towns, young people leave once they graduate. In the last census, only 8% of the city's population was between 18 and 24. To hang on to people, Richmond offers a tax abatement program to anyone who buys and refurbishes one of its historic downtown buildings. Sound of Music is a popular recording studio in a former warehouse on Richmond's West Broad Street. It's owned by Dave Lowry of the bands Camper Van Beethoven and Cracker, and John Morand, who says they bought the building in a neighborhood that is clearly in transition.
It was very affordable at the time because the downtown was much less developed. There were none of the apartment buildings and other galleries and things that are in this neighborhood now. Is pretty much us and a lot of places to get your hair done.
Look in any number of city neighborhoods around the country and you find that artists looking for a cheap place to work are often willing to move into blighted neighborhoods. Apartments and businesses often follow. The trend helped revitalize other Richmond neighborhoods, and city officials hope it'll happen again on West Broad. But John Moran says the city's efforts to improve the neighborhood have been mixed.
It's changed in a way, and it hasn't changed at all in a way. I mean, the new main police station is two blocks that way, but there's still a crack house right behind the studio. The college is moving in sort of on both directions, which is a good thing.
Moran says overall business is good, but mostly they record white rock musicians.
Richmond has so much karma attached to the past, it's been hard to make connections in the black music world for us because I think traditional segregation among businesses and people in Virginia, it's not that people don't get along, they just don't get along together.
Richmond has a large African American population, and its mayor is black. But Richard Florida says, like a lot of cities, its levers of power are still controlled by the old guard.
Richmond is like my former hometown of Pittsburgh. They say they're tolerant. They want to be tolerant. They want to be open. But when you go there, it's the same kind of country club crowd or the same kind of local elite that really run the show. Where in Austin, Texas, you know, you can move there for 2 years and be elected mayor.
Comments like these have stoked the fire for Florida's critics, who say he places too much emphasis on frivolous things like arts and culture at the expense of basic services like safe streets and good schools.
Before we have creativity, we'd have to have a government that works.
David Brussett is an editorial writer for the Providence Journal in Rhode Island. Florida held some seminars there that resulted in a report by local officials called A Call to Action, Building Providence's Creative and Innovative Economy. Brussett agrees there is value in attracting the creative class, but to do that, Providence has to first solve some other problems.
I think creative people, like most people, are attracted by, you know, housing they can afford to live in, places that don't tax the bejesus out of them after they've worked all day. I think this is all basic stuff, but it requires difficult decision-making on the part of government, and sometimes the government will look for something more pleasant to say, such as, we need to be more attractive to creative people. You know, it sounds a little bit easier, you know, more of a party.
For his part, Richard Florida says there are no quick fixes and that some cities have oversimplified his ideas. He says he knows you can't improve an economy with latte bars and music clubs. He's more worried about what this new economy may mean if it's not understood.
The rise of the creative economy is making inequality worse. What's happening is that all these creative people are forcing themselves into about a dozen cities, New York, Washington, Chicago, you know, San Francisco, Seattle, Austin, Texas, and several more. Those cities are becoming growth meccas. They're pulling away from the rest of the country, and they're creating a lot of inequality within them. At the same time, housing is becoming unaffordable for virtually anyone who has a middle-income job. So the creative economy is not generating just wealth and productive capacity and all these great things. It's generating a whole heck of a lot of problems that no one in this country, whether they're a Democrat or a Republican, even wants to face up to.
Florida adds that competition for the creative class is getting even tougher. American cities are not just competing with each other, but with cities around the world. So now he's working on a new book called The Flight of the Creative Class. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News.